Mike, turn your games down.
Hi, everyone. Episode 271 of Games My Mom Found. And who is sailing the small seas with me tonight?
Avast ye mateys, it's Nate. And I have to tell everyone that Joe Butler hated the touch controls in this game.
Hello, everybody. I'm Barry, and I'm with Premium Edition Games. And right now, I can announce that our next series of titles will be announced on March 25th. We have a brand new Direct, and we have a ton of games in stock right now. So please go to premiumeditiongames.com and find your new favorite game today.
And this is Richard Sampson from the YouTube channel Rich Kale, and I am prepared for adventure, but I'd be hiding in the crate because of that lady pirate, but I think Joe Butler's in there.
And we are here to talk about a game that I never thought I'd actually play. The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass, developed and published by Nintendo, and came out for the Nintendo DS in 2007.
Yep.
And only been re-released once since then. It was on the Wii U.
I did not know that.
Oh, wow. Virtual console. I didn't know that either.
Yeah,
it would be the right console for it, to be honest.
And yeah, we so would send you there to buy it, but they closed that down.
Yeah, the only way to play it now is with the physical on the DS.
Yeah.
I mean, or you could find a DS emulator.
Oh, don't say those words. Oh.
That would be really hard to play with the mouse, though, I believe, versus the stylus.
There's a mod to play this game with an actual controller on the DS emulator. Oh,
that's interesting. How would you do like things like the boomerang and stuff where you have to draw the path?
I have no idea. I didn't look it up. I just know that that's a thing because friend of the show, Emmanuel, was like, that's how he played it. And that's how he was trying to tell me I should. And I was going to, but I have a flash cart. So I was able to play this on a legit DS. And I feel like you kind of have to. Otherwise, it takes away from what this game is really trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. This game had a lot of mechanics that were designed, I think, exclusively for the DS.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, before we get going, I should probably start with memories. So I'll say I have no memories of this game. I never bought it, never played it until a week ago. And yeah, there's mine. Oh, what about you, Barry? What's your history with this game?
So as a huge, huge, huge Zelda fan, I remember distinctly when this came out, I pre-ordered it at Electronic Boutiques, rest in peace. And I remember driving to the mall to run in to pick it up. You know, as I'm running through the other stores to get home, I am, you know, like I opened it in my hands and I'm popping it out. And I'm like kind of like flipping through the instruction manual while running through like JCPenney to get to my car and got home. And I just couldn't wait to play it. And I knew, you know, when it was announced, I knew there was the whole controversy over the touch screen. And I'm like, you know what? I'll see how I like it. But as a Zelda fan, I owe it to myself to play. And I thoroughly enjoyed it the entire, yeah, I had no problem. I played through not in one sitting, but you know, like that was my dedicated game until I finished it. And I had a blast.
All right. And Richard?
Oh, let's see. I think I got this shortly after it came out. I think it was just when I finally had a I had the DS before that, but I just thought they just had a brain fart there. Like, I think it was a birthday gift. I could be wrong about that because sometimes I couldn't necessarily, you know, I was married. We had a young child. My daughter was probably about within her second year of life. So it was like a nice little gift for me for a birthday. I think that's the case. But, you know, it was a fun little experience when I played at that time. This is, of course, before all the hate came down about one certain aspect, which I'm sure we will touch on. But yeah, I actually tried to replay it a couple years ago. Had to take my daughter to the hospital. She had to have back surgery done. And, you know, we're sitting there waiting for, you know, the surgery done. So I'm trying to work my way through it again. But, you know, it's there are good memories attached to this game.
And it works well for handheld. And what about you, Nate?
So I first got this game in 2011 and I did not like it. And I traded it back in. And then I went, oh, yeah, Zelda's my favorite franchise. I shouldn't have done a stupid thing like that. And then I bought it, found it complete in box for not a bad price at a local game store and bought it and played through it this time.
All right.
I'm assuming it was before 2020 that you found a good price?
No, it was literally like end of 2023. I think it was like $40.
Wow.
That's not bad, unfortunately.
The best thing, though, and I'll bring it up when we do Spirit Tracks in the future, if intent, is I found I found a loose cart of Spirit Tracks for 50. And I said, all right, you know, and then I asked the guy if he had just like an empty DS case. And he goes, actually, I think we have like the full case in the back. And then just gave me the full case, like, and didn't increase the price. And I looked it up after.
And everything?
Yeah.
Wow.
I looked it up after. That shit goes for like $90. And I was like, thank you, Replay, for not screwing me over on that.
We're lucky. I mean, I was at a toy swap today and I saw somebody put out a Minish Cap, just the cartridge for $60. I'm like, I'm glad I don't collect authentic.
Right. It is insane. It's like,
so I do love Zelda. I actually bought all the, I'm in the process of buying all the Switch Zelda games because I just love Zelda.
See, and that's why I love doing authentic, because especially with Nintendo, like there are certain companies out there like Ubisoft, like, you know, those games are going to be dropped by 50% within a month or so. But Nintendo games always hold value, or they rarely go on sale. So if you buy it, you could always, if you ever need, resell it, and you'll either break even, maybe you'll lose a little bit, but most likely you're going to make money. So you might as well just bite the bullet, get it and enjoy it and have it. And it's like almost like a mini investment in a sense, because they will go up.
Or do what I do and wait 16 years to get around to a game and play an emulation. Hey, as long as you wait. I've always been a big partner of emulation, but I will not emulate Switch until Switch is dead and gone. I will not touch that, because to me, that's getting too close to where you're breaking the law, where I'm not comfortable with that. Now, did I have any hard feelings pirating a game that came out 17 years ago about pirates? Absolutely not. 16 years ago? No, didn't bother me one bit.
Switch emulator is going to be something that probably won't happen anytime soon after the lawsuit that just happened.
Yeah, and Switch emulator shouldn't have been out already anyway. They should have waited.
They were also leaking games too, which is,
yeah, like, that I don't agree with either. Like that, yeah, you need that.
Yeah,
like that can wait. Like emulation should be the way it is. Like, we don't even have Vita emulation good yet, or I don't have even regular Xbox emulation good. Like, and that's stuff I want. I don't want Switch. I want systems that are dead and gone.
Honestly, why would you necessarily need Xbox emulation? They should be allowed to run those things, games on PC anyhow.
You can, but I really want to play Breakdown with save state, because that game is hard. And I'm not kidding. I really want to play that game again, but I want to play save state so I actually can beat it.
Also, you don't need to emulate the Vita, because there's like two good Vita games and they ported them to PS5.
There's so many more. It's not true.
I know. Vita library looks amazing. I really want to do it.
Vita has a great library. It does. Sony didn't support it.
They just need to bring Uncharted Golden Abyss to my PS4 and I'll be content. But which, that's a good game, actually.
I forgot about it. There's a lot of Vita stuff that I want.
It's a tech demo. Good game.
Someday. So this game, is this a direct sequel to Wind Waker?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
You couldn't tell that by the opening?
Yeah. It literally starts where Wind Waker ends.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I'm not, I just wasn't sure, and I forgot to look it up.
Yeah, this is one of the easier to place games in any of the Zelda timelines, because it's a direct sequel.
But it's also a direct sequel that doesn't require prior knowledge
of
first game. Because it doesn't have anything to do with Wind Waker. And and weirdly, in this case, this Link is just completely different, too.
Oh. No.
Completely different. But I mean, he doesn't have anything. Like, he doesn't have any of the stuff he collected or anything from Wind Waker.
Yeah, there's a bit of a reason to it when you think about it.
But I was wondering, because Tetra was Zelda, and he's trying to the whole game, you're trying to rescue Tetra, which is Zelda. So I'm like, this has got to be a sequel. I know Spirit Tracks is a different Link.
Yes.
Different Link, but still same timeline.
It's many years later.
Yeah. There's only one character from these two games that's in Spirit Tracks directly.
Okay. We'll get to that later this year. But so I didn't really know that everything with this game is a touchscreen. I did not know that going into this.
Yeah.
I was not aware that you don't even, like, touch the buttons, really. You control Link with the stylus by touching the screen. You attack by touching the screen. You switch your items. I did it by touching the screen. Like, I did not know that when I put this game on the show. So,
yet it works better than you would expect it to, just on the premise.
Yes, it does. It does. And it's kind of, I do like that with some of them, you actually have more control over some of your weapons.
For sure.
Yeah. The boomerang, the bomb shoes. Like, bomb shoes are... I actually used bomb shoes for the first time in a Zelda game. I never use them, unless they make me. I just don't like them.
I mean, you had to in, like, Ocarina of Time in the bowling game and the target minigame with the bomb.
Then I did, but
yeah, there's also that one area in Ocarina of Time where you have to actually send the bomb chew over to take out that switch, I think.
Yeah, in the spirit temple.
Yeah.
What if we just talked about Ocarina of Time?
I did that already, but I'll do it again.
I didn't mind the touch controls. It did take some getting used to. But every once in a while, I would go to, like, attack an enemy, and then Link would just run into, like, the choo-choo, you know? And I'm like, don't do that. Swipe at him.
Yeah.
I didn't have that problem.
Yeah, I don't think I had that problem either.
It was, yeah, well, hey, it was probably a me problem.
They did run with the whole, the ship theme that was really developed on in Wind Waker with this one.
Yeah. I like the overworld where, like, it actually had an overworld, and you can control the ship and go around and explore. And especially for the fact that it was portable at that time. I mean, the DS had 3D games. I mean, obviously, it launched with, like, Mario 64. But it was still, the idea of having a 3D game in the palm of your hands was still a relatively new concept. Mm-hmm. And to see them do that and how well they pulled it off, it was really cool, especially at the time. Now it probably like, oh, well, you know, my Steam Deck or my Switch can easily do something much greater. But back in 2007, it was really state of the art.
Yeah, very. And of course, the story, how they get into this story, I mean, into this area, we must start because I think it used a little bit of lore that was initially mentioned, well, if you think about it, and in Wind Waker, because the ghost ship, that's your main thing to locate in the initially in the game.
Yeah, because the ghost ship takes Tetra, but they're in a different area than they were in Wind Waker, correct? Like, this is a whole different section of the sea?
Yeah, this is outside of the barriers that we all hit in Wind Waker, you know, that to keep you from going too far. Because wraparound don't work in Legend of Zelda.
Well, it's not that his wraparound doesn't work. It's that there's more to the world outside of those barriers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, remember, we're past the point where, well, Zelda was always confined into a set world. You couldn't go outside of the barriers no matter what.
Yeah, it always has been. Even Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, if you look, you go to the edge, you could see this world beyond the map. There's just a chasm. You just can't cross it.
Yeah.
Can anyone tell me what happened to the King of Red Lions?
I was wondering the same thing.
I think the King of Red Lions disappeared because remember, the King of Hyrule was the King of Red Lions in Wind Waker.
Yeah.
And he drowns.
Yeah. So Link has become part of Tetra's crew. And they go off to, you know, find a new land to, you know, bring back the kingdom, so to speak.
And remember, the king stays at the bottom of the ocean. He stays in old Hyrule when he makes the wish. He's like, no, you know, like, it's my rule is done. It's time for, you know, fresh blood. And he just kind of stays there.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't remember. I don't remember anything what you guys are saying.
Yeah. At the Wind Waker, the final confrontation, he makes the wish and the starts flooding and he purposely stays down there.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to play that again. It's actually on the show end of this year. So I will be playing it again.
Maybe I should be glad I'm not part of that episode because I'll probably be. I'd have to start it like God knows how long ago. You
know? Hopefully, there'll be a Switch port this year so to make things easier.
It really would be nice if they'd get around to it.
Yeah, well, we got at least Link's Awakening on the Switch.
Yeah.
Which was beautifully done.
Yes, it was.
I need to play that.
It's a remake, though. That wasn't a port.
No, it's a good remake.
It's a very good remake. And this is from a person who's played every version of that game. But we end up, and of course, we, you know, Link, after we get a brief recap of Wind Waker from...
Very brief, because someone didn't even notice it.
Nico, I think, wasn't that the pirate's name?
I think.
Anyhow, we all get called to we get called to keep our eyes out open, and we run across a ghost ship. And after Link and Tetra get on board... Everything goes south.
It's a game telling you shouldn't be greedy. essentially what happens. I mean, they're looking for treasure and they get on the ship and then she gets captured. That's what it is.
She gets captured by whatever evil spirit is controlling this ship. Link gets apparently thrown off and wakes up on the main island of the game. Found by a fairy who has lost her memory.
Yeah, I do appreciate things about this game. Like, they do a good job of doing the Metroid thing where you lose your abilities. enough that someone didn't realize this was a direct sequel and was too lazy to look it up. So I'll give them that. Like, the stuff with the ship, I kind of mentioned earlier, like, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about the open world. Like, even though you do get a fast travel system, you have to draw all the symbols after you already shoot the frog in order to teleport different places. I just found myself just sailing just because. I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the good elements of this game. The exploration. There's easy ways to see what else you can do while playing the game because you get, if you watch the maps, you see stuff. Of course, some encounters you don't necessarily want to keep repeating can keep happening.
The pirate gets annoying when they stop giving you money for it.
Yeah. But yeah,
real quick. I can't tell you how many times I like traced a trail and then put my DS down to like play on my phone. And then the music, like the battle music would kick up. They're like, oh yeah, I gotta like interact with the game.
That happened to me too. There were a couple times where I just sailed it, but I didn't have the volume on for reasons. And I'm like, well, I have enough hearts. I should be able to survive. And a couple times he didn't make it to destination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silly stuff.
But it was it's a cool concept. Like, I'm happy it's there.
Yeah. Of course, we meet the one the fairy calls Grandpa, and our person calls Old Man, who is actually, very important to the game.
But liked him.
Yeah, the old man was nice. He was...
He grew on me.
Yeah, he does grow on you. I mean, he's vague. He doesn't know if you're the one who can help, but in turn, you show how good you are, and he's like, okay, this guy's who I need. I mean...
I think a lot of the characters in this game are great.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was having way more fun with this game than I expected.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't expect to have such a good time.
I think there's a good amount of stuff that's very good about this game. And it sort of makes up for the one really big negative that comes has been mentioned all throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But to bring up a point of what Nate had said before we did this recording, and he kept saying to me, he's like, the game has dungeons! It has dungeons!
Yeah, of course it has dungeons.
Dungeons are back.
We're so excited.
I may just be a dirty Zelda fan, but like I didn't realize how much I missed dungeons until I played this game, and then I was like, man, they should put dungeons in the next Zelda game.
Yeah, dungeons have always
had some dungeons.
Yeah, I just like my you know, get this item, use it to beat the dungeon, and then, you know, move on.
Yeah, every item you did get in this game was used in, you know. Well, they keep that up from past Zeldas, too.
Oh, yeah. It's just the Breath of the Wild and Tears don't do that. But I liked it. Like, I had also kind of... I played Breath of the Wild finally not too long ago for the show, and I forgot how much I'm like, I really do enjoy Zelda dungeons. I was surprised how much I missed it, too.
There are certain things that are missing from this game, of course. I mean, you don't have to hunt for pieces of heart.
Yeah, that was something I didn't expect, when it just gives you full heart containers. That kind of threw me for a loop.
Well, let's face it, that's a nice little throwback to the original Zelda.
It was, but it did throw me for a loop.
But sometimes it's better. I mean, pieces of heart are great for rewarding exploration. And I think in a more open landmass, I'll say, it fits better. Games like Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, stuff like that. And here, there's limited space they can work with. There's limited islands. And it's obviously limited hardware with the DS, so it made sense for them, instead of throwing all this extra stuff, just doing heart pieces.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. That is a very good point. But of course, you still had items to find, these gems that you found throughout the game.
And don't forget, ship parts.
Yeah.
You just get random, like a lot of the treasures you'll find in this game will be random ship parts, because you can alter the way your ship looks, and I just eventually just kept selling them all, because...
Yeah, but there is also a plus to the ship parts. If you have enough of a set, you actually increase the health that your ship has.
Yes, and I did do that, and then I got the set that I liked, and then I sold everything else.
So. Yeah, but some of them you can only buy.
But I had my set.
You didn't collect them all?
No.
I have never collected them all.
I will not. That's too much work.
I wouldn't even try it myself because, let's face it, when there's about 8 different items, you end up getting repeats of items, which that's a smart one to sell off, at least. You'd have to put in probably Breath of the Wild time into this game to get all of them.
And you know what? I like things like that where it's completely cosmetic and it's not necessary, but it allows you to go above and beyond if you want to put the time. And you also have to remember this is a 2007 game. The amount of games that were available in 2007 versus 2024 is vastly different, you know. And if you're, you know, and we're also adults, so we have the freedom to be able to, oh, I could just get another game when I'm done with this one. But if you were a kid, you know, and this is your one game for the month or maybe every other month, you know, that gives you more replay value. That gives you something else to do. But again, it was completely optional.
Yeah.
I thought there was enough in this game, but there wasn't. Like, if you wanted to be like me and kind of mainline it, you could, but there is stuff to screw around and do. Like, you could completely go through the sunken temple over and over and over again if you wanted to and get different stuff. So
yeah, of course, though, that temple becomes a very key part of this game, which is unfortunately one of the negatives for this game. I mean, let's face it, first off, though, you have to get from one side of the island to the other. And the bridge is out, so you got to go through a cave, but you can't go through the cave unless you have a weapon. And in order to get the weapon, you have to be, the game gets a little bit not fully meta at this point, but to get the weapon, you actually have to count the number of trees on the beach.
Or use the internet. But yes. So, I mean, the concept of the fact that you can draw on the DS, on the touchscreen, on the map for this, like, I really liked it. More than I thought I would.
It's cool.
It's strangely cool.
And I like that the dungeons are actually built around that fact. Like, there's so many, you know, there's an order of operation to do a lot of the puzzles. And they pretty much make it so, like, oh, you're going to need to write down the order. And you're going to need to write down little things to solve the puzzles and utilize that with the stylus. And I thought that was pretty ingenious that only, you know, this and Spirit Tracks really do that. Because you have a pad and paper right there. And I like that they thought outside the box. They said, what can the DS do that other systems can't? Oh, the stylus, you know, and drawing and writing. And how can we utilize that in clever ways?
Yeah. I mean, that's also that's a throwback to how we used to play games before we had internet, phones that could take pictures and all that. We had to make our own maps or buy them. I mean, for some of my, like, I think for Link's Awakening, when I was first playing it and all that, I had, besides the booklet, I had like pad and paper and listing everything I find in a section, exact spots. And that was part of your own mapping. If you dig at this spot here, you find a piece of heart. If you dig at this spot, you know, you find this. Lift this rock, you find this. You know, we're all writing this stuff down. Sometimes we're committing it to memory and then forgetting it later and having the fun of rediscovering it. I was like, you do that.
I'll take this over that. But it was just cool. Like, and then there was a comment, Nate, you brought up that I completely forgot about, that you can blow into the DS.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you will blow into that DS or yell. And your family will go, why are you yelling in the bathroom?
I think it was Richard had made a comment in the chat. Like, yeah, when I asked you to make a loud noise, just blow into the DS. And there was one point when you're trying to buy the salvage thing off the freaking asshole, he's like, well, you need to be excited. You need to yell. So I blow in the DS. He's like, not good enough. Wouldn't even sell it to me. Okay, so I blow in the DS again. He's like, better. I'll sell it to you for 1,000 rupees. I'm like, well, I don't have 1,000 rupees. And the internet told me I can get it for as low as 300. So I literally had to yell. I went, I want it now, or something stupid, and yell into the DS. And he's like, I like it. Here, I'll sell it to you for 400. I was like,
yeah. Close enough.
See, nobody was home, Nate, so no one could wonder why I was screaming at the DS. I purposely did that when nobody was home.
Well, I was yelling, give me the lowest price possible on this.
see, what's funny is you did it with no one home. I went outside right by my neighbor's house and just started screaming, you know. I didn't care.
But you left the house.
Yeah, I left the house, but I screamed so my neighbors were like, what the hell's going on outside?
Yeah, but
walked back inside afterwards.
Neighbors are fine. It's your wife that would have been the one being like, what the fuck are you doing?
I mean, it's also a nod to something they had in the original Legend of Zelda, too.
The very original one, not the one that we had.
Yeah, and they even brought back the enemy for that. The Poles Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Because that one was always sensitive to loud noise.
But for us, we didn't have that, so we had to bomb them, from what I remember.
Or play the flute.
No, the flute didn't work.
Oh, it didn't?
Or the recorder, yeah. Like that, I remember as a kid trying the recorder, like, I don't get it. How else can I make music without, you know, no internet, so no one knew anything about the Japanese version. Yeah, that was a shame.
Yeah, but it's like, I think they were glad they could put that mechanic back in.
I agree.
It was cool. Like, there was a lot of really interesting things about this game that I was surprised that I enjoyed way more than I expected to.
I don't think we brought it up, but maybe, I don't know if you're saving it, but when you have to transfer the maps and you have to close the DS to,
yeah,
like,
that was so cool.
Such an ingenious puzzle. Like, so good.
Yeah, that was a very, like I said, it was, this game was designed to really utilize unique properties that the DS brings, and then transfer the map. Boom.
Yeah, that probably is one of the best puzzles you'll ever see. Like, that just was so unique, and just, I was a bit flabbergasted, I'm going to use that word, when I got to that puzzle, and you had to, like, where you close the DS to mark it on your map, because I was like, how do I do this? And I'm trying to draw, I'm like, I don't understand, and then the internet's like, close your DS, and I'm like, oh.
I mean, it is something that should come to you, because when you look at the image on the wall, the quote imprint that you're supposed to transfer, and you look at your map, if you notice the patterns, you notice that one section of map is basically flipped.
Yeah, but you see, I didn't want to close my DS, because with other games that I played on that flash cart, sometimes when you close it, it doesn't come back.
Yeah, I was worried about that with you when I knew you were playing it.
Luckily, it doesn't seem to happen that much anymore, but yeah, there's from what I've heard, I bought a kind of faulty flash cart. So, but yeah, no, it did. I was a little scared, but it worked.
I mean, it was the kind of thing like what they did. What did Sega do it in the one game? In order to progress in the X-Men game on Sega, you had to hit a reset button.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
It's the first. I think it's the first one.
Yeah.
In a time when games didn't really have saving.
Yeah. So. But of course, you know, once we get back to the main story, when we get through the tunnel, we get to the town. Like, the first town in the whole game, the only town you run across in the whole game. And you find out that in order to go set sail, we need to find Captain Linebeck, the bravest chicken you'll ever see.
I like Linebeck.
He's an asshole.
He's an asshole, but he matured a bit.
Yeah, he's better in this game than he was in Wind Waker.
Oh, he was in Wind Waker?
Wind Waker.
I don't
think he was in Wind
Waker. No, I'm thinking of someone else.
Oh, okay, God, I don't remember Wind Waker at all. I haven't played it since 07, I think, or 06.
Hey, I haven't played it since that far back either. Maybe even farther back, so.
That's what. Yeah, like what Barry said earlier, I do really hope Wind Waker gets put on Switch, because I'll play it that way, maybe. Maybe. I want to play the HD version more than I want to play the original.
Mm.
I have the HD version.
I have the original. I still like the original.
Same. HD is better, just because it made a few life achievements. Or not
Swift
achievements.
Sail, baby.
I will be. But I own both, so I wouldn't feel bad at all. But yeah.
But
no, I mean, this game, it did a lot of things that you couldn't have done in any other system, which I didn't think I would appreciate as much as I did on the DS. The way the items are, I did have some issues with the bow, because I would accidentally shoot arrows and I didn't mean to, because I forget to put it away.
Yeah. We all did that.
Okay, good. So it wasn't just me. Like, that happened to me. Boomerang, not so much, because I think it would go away after you do your swing. Like, drawing on the screen how you want to do your boomerang, now that was really creative.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, when I mentioned Lambeck, I was thinking Spirit Tracks. Like, I knew he was back, and I go,
yeah, but
he's
that's not
better there.
Well,
I could have swore he was in Wind Waker, too. I thought he was a minigame person that you talked to, but
Linebeck, well, we have to, just to clarify, Linebeck in Spirit Tracks is actually a descendant of this Linebeck, I think.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I was wondering about that, but I didn't want to ask.
Yeah.
So, like, one thing that we should talk about, everyone's favorite dungeon. So, one of the big issues with this game is that you repeat a dungeon that has a timer that also drains your health when the timer runs out, if you're not in safe spots.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, that's the Temple of the Ocean King.
It grew on me after a bit.
And then it started to irritate you.
It did, but then I did what Nate told me to do.
Mm.
And all got better.
Which was, what did I tell you to do?
You told me to look up a video guide and just do what he did.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was the best way to do it, because there was a puzzle that I was doing it, not legit, but partly legit. And then I had to get 3 gems and then take those 3 gems and bring them down a floor. But you could also use them on the floor that you're on to get chests. And that would have screwed me up because I wouldn't have thought to take them out to bring them downstairs right away until the timer had really, you know, ran out by the time I would have thought about it.
Yeah, each floor was its own puzzle. But when you pay attention to how the floors are laid out and with certain items, you actually could see that, well, once you get the items that might be on those floors, with each set of items that you find, you can actually bypass some of them.
Yeah, and that was nice. You can also end up like key. If you go through the whole dungeon again later on when you have more equipment, you can then get keys that you can then use on different floors later in the dungeon and bypass even more.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that, but
speaking of keys, the initial time you visit the dungeon, you get the key from Linebeck, and I found out the hard way that if you die after getting that key, you start outside the temple and a different cutscene plays where Linebeck gives you the key.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's cool.
So that I thought that was cool, but I was also like, dang, I died.
I mean, to be fair, this game is hard when you start it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you don't understand the controls at first. Like, I was like so confused and didn't understand what I was doing. I ran off to my death many times. You know, even though I'm doing freaking drawing on a freaking touchscreen, but still, like, I was having a hard time at first.
Well, it is one of those things. All Zelda games are hard in the beginning, but they try and meter it that you can't necessarily quickly die. They've done that, I think, especially since the first couple Zelda games. I mean, they don't expect you to say, you know, you don't come out of the gate and say, you know, I'm going to, you know, you slay the smaller monsters and then turn around and there's the big ass Lionel trying to kill you.
No, I mean, the sunken temple isn't so bad after a while. Like, I really bitched about it, but, like, when I was watching the video and the guy was showing me how to, like, bypass traps as you get different equipment, and I was like, you know, this isn't that bad anymore. Like, it was somewhat fun. It just, I don't like timers. We took away the timer.
The idea, though, behind it is that when you go back to it, you have new tools, and you could use those tools to make it faster and get through it. And I agree. I think the first time playing it, at least back then, I didn't mind it as much because it was a new Zelda experience and we didn't get Zelda experiences often. So I was like, cool, it's another dungeon. I just looked at each section as a new dungeon. So even though it was just the Temple of the Ocean King, I looked at each section as its own separate dungeon. So I was like, cool, I've got more than 8 dungeons now in this game. But like going back now where we have a lot of quality of life improvements and obviously there's other games competing for the time and it's just like, I have to go back there again.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. It had its issues, but I just ended up enjoying it more than I thought I would. Like, I used a video, like, there's one part you can save where you are about midway, and the first time I did, it took me 9 minutes. I watched a video with the same exact equipment, did it in 2 minutes.
That's the one break they give you.
Yeah, and that was enough, to be honest, especially if you use a guide. You can get down there and only end up using, like, 10 seconds. Or so if you grab all the gold pots. So, like, it's not... You can give yourself a lot of time to do what you need to do.
And some things were... It gets a little bit easier to run them when... Well, as you get farther into the game. Because the biggest problem in the temple is all the phantoms.
Yeah, they grew on me later. But yeah, no, they can be very annoying.
I think, like, my complaint of it is that... Like, I complete a section, and then I go out in the world, and I'm exploring, and I'm doing stuff. And then the game is like, hey, you have to go back and go deeper, but then you have to redo the sections you've already done. And I'm like, okay, how did I do these again? Then I have to, like, figure out the, like, you know, I have to rethink of, like, okay, how did I do this puzzle?
Yeah, and that's part of where I think a lot of people hate that dungeon, because it's tedious.
Yeah, I think if you had to, like, a checkpoint, like Link's Awakening, for example, has, like, the midway points in dungeons to teleport. Like, if you had that, you can instantly teleport to where you last were for each section, I don't think people would complain about that dungeon nearly as much.
Yeah, no. For sure. And I mean, the puzzles are fun. Like, there's some creative ones in there, like when you drop a phantom in a hole for the first time because you need his key. That's fun.
Yeah.
It's when just you run time.
Into a spike wall for the 18th time, that's fun.
If you didn't have the time limit, I think it would have been just, nobody would have complained. Oh, well, no time limit and to do what Barry said, where you can just, each stage, you can kind of go back to it. But I mean, and it wouldn't have bothered people as much.
Even with the time limit, if you could just instantly teleport, I don't think people would have minded that much. Because they gave you enough time. It wasn't one of those where, like, you're sweating. Like, they gave you ample time.
Yeah.
Like you screw up like I did that one time without the guy. But yes, they do give you a lot of time.
there was also the part where you have to draw the Triforce, and apparently I'm really bad at that.
You probably weren't doing it. You have in the picture that you see it, which I did not write down. I'm like, I can draw a Triforce by heart. You have to start from the top left or it will never work.
Oh, I started from bottom left because that's how I draw triangles. And then I was like, okay, do I have to do it? And like, you know, I was like, it was just, it would always glow faintly. And I'm like, just let me in.
Wait, when you draw a triangle, you start from the bottom right corner or bottom left corner, I mean?
Bottom left corner, yeah.
I always start from the top peak of the triangle and drawing a triangle. So for me, it was no problem.
Yeah, but I think this one, you also had to draw it in the form of the Triforce, and you have to do it in one go.
Yeah.
So it's like I started, I think, at the top, down to the left, halfway over, make the inverted triangle, and then close it up.
And you can't repeat itself either too much. Otherwise, you'll run out of how much color you have, essentially. I'm an ink, for lack of
a better word. Like it's one of those line puzzles where you have to, you know, you can't cross, you can only, you know, do so many. So, you know, you just start with, I mean, that's one that you have to start at the corner.
Yeah.
But no, I had the same issue, Nate. I was getting irritated. It wasn't until I looked at it went, oh, there's a line arrow going this way.
I honestly didn't even notice that. Like, I watched a video and just copied what, like, the motions the guy made, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I guess fucking Van Gogh works here at the Temple of the Ocean King.
No, it was frustrating me, too. So it's not just you. I was getting really annoyed. I'm like, why can't I get this to work? But yeah. It was something simple.
Yeah, keep it simple, stupid.
I needed it. But to kind of the other thing about the sea travel, you have the salvage arm, which I did like it. I didn't realize in that mini game that you do when you drop the salvage arm down and you have to dodge all these mines and everything to get the chest. If you don't line up near with the chest, you can fail that completely and just nothing happens.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either.
I didn't either until I did it by accident, until I was like, oh, I'm close enough. And I was like off the side, like, miss. And I'm like, what? I went down here.
Yeah. No, you have to. It's always, unlike in Wind Waker, you have to be on the right spot. Well, like in Wind Waker, you have to be on the right spot to salvage. This just has that added complication of trying to catch it at the right, you know, avoiding the things that are down there. Which in all likelihood, you wouldn't be able to see them anyhow.
I liked going that you had to go back up too. Like it wasn't just get to the bottom. You had to like navigate back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that part.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fun wrinkle.
It was fun except for the part when I hit too many things and the treasure went back down.
And then you had to repair the salvage arm.
Get good.
It's called don't not pay attention is what it's called.
You got to use strategic mind destroyment.
Yeah, it's called on your way down. That's what it was for me. I was doing other stuff, and I'm like, oop.
When you say that, I like to imagine that you're like cooking dinner, like you're starting.
I mean,
like,
to be fair,
pot of pasta or something. You're like, oh shit! Like
I have done that. I have played games. I try to make very good use of my time whenever I'm doing other things where I can. But no, I was distracted, and then I just wasn't paying attention. I was like, ah, damn it. So, but no, I it was cool. I mean, it was cool to have all these different mini games to take advantage of the DS. Like, you have fishing. I only did it a couple times. I'm like, this is pointless. But it's cool that it's there.
Well, it is supposed to be.
You get something for it. You get a heart piece, I think.
I didn't ever get it, but.
I caught, like, three fish, and they were all the same, and I'm like, I'm done.
Oh, you didn't get any of the big ones.
No, and that's why I just said, fuck it. Well, also trying to line up with the fish so you can fish, because the fish on the screen move.
Yeah.
So.
That is a tricky part of it.
Yeah, I was annoyed. I just didn't bother with it. I didn't do some of the hard pieces that you have to do the mini games for. Like, there's the shooting mini game with the ship where you got to shoot all the targets. I didn't do that one.
That one was relatively fun. I had fun with that one.
Hey, Barry, is there a trading side quest in this?
Don't remember if there was a trading I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think there was.
I love those trading quests.
I do too. I thought the internet said there was one, but I never did it. But then again, I was just kind of done.
No, I don't remember one in that game.
There is.
Is there?
Yes, and you get the great spin attack through doing it. But apparently, none of us did it.
It involves finding that notebook.
Notebook?
I have no idea.
One of the sailors I remember mentioned he lost a notebook, but I never found it. Huh. And I bet it's bet it's in the published guide.
But yeah, so there is a trading side quest, apparently, where you can get new clothes, too, or something. Yeah, I never found it.
Yeah, let's face it.
To begin the trading sequence, Link must board the Traveler's ship belonging to the Man of Smiles in the northeast corner of the sea. Once Link defeats all the monsters who have taken his ship, the Man of Smiles will offer Link a choice between a mysterious thing, which is a hero's new clothes, or a normal thing, which is a treasure map. No matter which Link chooses, he'll give them both out of generosity. Next, Link can take the clothes to Naive, who can be found the Prince of Red Lions in the northwest corner, and he will give you a telescope. Okay, and then you get it. Then you can trade the telescope.
Guard book.
Yeah.
Guard notebook, and then that for a wood heart, and then that for the Swordsman Scroll. Yeah. I did it probably the original time, but not the second time.
I forgot it was even here. I think I was just ready to. Yeah, I was just ready to beat this game because I beat this game on Monday this week, and I try to beat games by Saturday before we record, just because I'm trying to keep a week ahead of everything I do. So yeah, I just was like, I need to finish this game now. Well, that's cool. I do like the trading sequence a lot, but this one is very much at the end of the game, which is kind of like Link's Awakening was so much fun because you find it early in the game and you do it throughout the game.
Yeah. I mean, you could find this one early in the game, but you...
But you don't have access to the Northwest Quadrant until the end.
You can just get the hero's new clothes earlier, and then you have to wait to the Northwest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that doesn't really, like... I was going to say the enemy variation in this game is pretty good, too. Like, you have a lot of your regular enemies, and you have a few that were different, where you had, like, I don't remember the hell those guys are called. You had to hit them in the back with a boomerang. They look like Zora heads with sword and shields.
Oh, yeah, those bastards.
You have other big knights later. You had to shoot, like, an arrow in their eye and then hit them. Like, there was just some cool stuff that, and everything worked with the touchscreen combat. Like, I was surprised how much everything worked once I got the hang of it.
They did make it work very well. And they also added some challenges that you actually had required some thinking to get through. I mean, how am I supposed to make this big jump? Oh, here comes the wind. There we go.
The ones with the shield, I think those are, they're called Geozards.
Oh, okay.
With the Zora heads.
They were cool. And you get a couple, you get the hammer in this game at the very end, which I did not expect that, because I don't think I've seen the hammer in any other Zelda game besides Link to the Past.
It's in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Hammer's in.
How the hell did my brain forget that in Volvagia? How? Oh my god. I'm ashamed right now. I need to revoke my Zelda card.
I'm offended.
Volvagia. Whack-a-mole.
Man, how did I forget that?
I mean, let's face it. The hammer is also used to fight Ganon in Ocarina of Time.
It can be, yes. Oh, yeah, the very end. You're right. Yeah.
Is it not in Wind Waker? I feel like the hammer's in Wind. I thought it was an attuned Link one as well. That was not this one.
It's in this one.
This
is Toon Link.
It is Toon Link. You are correct. But to him, he's just regular Link.
So the hammer has appeared in The Adventure of Link, Link to the Past, Four Swords Adventures, Phantom Hourglass, Link Between Worlds, Triforce Wars, Breath of the Wild.
I forgot about that one too.
Green of Time.
I must be thinking of Link Between Worlds, even though that's not Toon Link, but.
No, I need to play again.
When he merges with the walls, he's a toon.
No, he's from that show from Nickelodeon, the Angela show.
The hammer's, I remember that. The hammer's also in spin-off Zelda Adventure, Ancient Stone Tablets, and Hyrule Warriors. So the hammer's been there quite a bit.
I want to play all of those games you just mentioned. And yes, I know what one of those is.
You don't have to play that one.
I'm playing the CDI games. I have a working CDI emulator, and I have the games, and I have the remakes that somebody remade those games.
No, I think if you're going to play that, you have to actually have the original CD. Like, you need to do it legit. You can't do it with an emulator. You have to have the real experience, and an emulator is not going to give you that for real.
Yeah, because I won't be able to find a remote with little buttons. Yeah, you are correct.
Well, that and then the load times are faster, I'm sure, with emulation versus, like, part of the struggle of those games was waiting for the load screen, especially Zelda's Adventure. When you went to a new screen, it was like you had to wait and load and everything to come in.
If I could find a CDI for someone gave it to me cheap, maybe, but not happening. But no, somebody remade them. At least remade two of them that Bill Tucker on A Gamer Looks at 40 actually interviewed, and because of him, I have copies of those now on my computer.
That's cool.
Oh, that is cool. Is that guy okay? Like.
He did remake the CDI games, so I don't
know. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, you know.
I mean, hey, I don't know if you believe this, but Nintendo didn't give a shit. Who'd have thought, huh?
I wonder why they didn't give a shit.
We're like, it's we don't acknowledge those exist, so we can't be mad at you because those don't exist. Those aren't real.
You know what? There's. I just realized in this list for the hammer, they put Wind Waker separately because it's called the Skull Hammer. But there was a hammer in Wind Waker called the Skull Hammer.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember that.
It counts.
Okay, so apparently I just have no memory. All right.
Yeah. It is
I'm an old man of 36. Not that old.
Dude, I just turned 49.
I know. I'm not old. I get really, but I'm also not like super young. I get mad at, I was talking to somebody not too long ago. Like, you're a youngin'. I'm like, I'm 36. Like, you're a youngin'. I'm like, man, I ain't that young anymore, buddy. Like,
here's Mike. I'll give you an easy test to see if you're young. And that's just go up to a group of younger people and just be like, yo, this place is bussin', and see how they react. And if they go on God, for real, you're young.
No, thank you. The trick is when you walk up the stairs, how do you feel? That's how you know.
My father used to say there are signs of being old. Needing bifocals is one.
Yeah, I do wear glasses, but not bifocals.
This one was dead, but it says, if you remember Paul McCartney in a group of Four Wings.
It should be more of if you've seen Paul McCartney with a group before Wings, yes, but okay, I'll take it.
And then another one is like, if you remember Marilyn Monroe acting, you're old. Of course, another one of his was, if the girls in Playboy look old enough to be your daughter, you're old.
Okay. Oh, wow.
That's one. All right. That's a little odd. To go back
how,
to...
how about if you remember blowing them cartridges to get them to work, you're old.
Well, I guess I'm old then.
Yep, I think we all are.
I like the fact they brought the shovel back, too, because I don't think the shovel's in a lot of games. I don't want to... I'm probably wrong, but...
how many games was this?
Pull up the list.
I'm pulling up the list. Let's see.
Link to the Past.
Link's Awakening. Oracle of Seasons. Oracle of Ages. Four Swords Adventures. Phantom Hourglass.
Okay.
As well as Ancient Stone Tablets, Freshly Picked, Tingles, Drowsy Rootland, and Cadence of Hyrule all had the shovel as well.
I just played Cadence of Hyrule too last year.
Yep.
Didn't remember that. That's a decent game, by the way.
That's awesome.
Are we like saving talk for bosses for later?
Yes. Well, we're almost there, but yeah. I want to talk about the other hookshot. Or not, it's not a hookshot. What is it called in this?
Grappling hook? Grappling hook?
I do like it in this. I like how they use it too. Like you can make a rope and then jump on it and then across it. I like stuff that was cool.
Is there an actual tutorial for that, because I didn't know that was a thing I could do
it's called the boss fight. If you don't do that, you won't win, but no, the game does not tell you.
There's one room in particular that you have to like connect to. You have to like walk across the ropes to do in the, I think it's in the Ocean King or maybe it's in the temple where you get it, but like I didn't know that was possible until I looked up a guide for it, because I was like, how do I get through this room?
Yeah, and it was clever that they made it also that not only does the rope, you can use it to cross, you can actually use it to propel yourself or as a reflection. Yeah. That was a great use of it.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was cool. I liked it a lot in this game. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it, and they made good use of it throughout the game.
Probably my favorite item in the game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You had the bow, you had the bombs. Did I miss any?
The bombs. Shovel?
Bombshoe. Hey, Bombshoe's actually useful because you can draw on the map and the game freezes for you to draw on the map and then the Bombshoe goes where you drew it to. That was actually fun.
Yeah.
Weird. I never thought I'd say Bombshoe fun, but it was fun.
Yeah, but you're missing the tense moment where you're standing in a straight line and you send the Bombshoe and it still goes off course. You go, fuck.
I didn't have that happen.
No, I'm talking about like an Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that fucking freaking mini game. I got it. Oh, nope. It just goes this way. Yeah. Hit a bump.
I secretly love the bomb shoes.
Never really cared for them. Like, I don't use them in Zelda games, really, except for the couple times when it makes you. And I mean, yes, I used it when the game made me, but it was just really, I liked the fact that I had more, that it was, I drew a line and it followed the line. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Oh. They had more, it's like I said, you have more control over things. Boomerang always went in a straight line or on a curve. In this game, you could make it go left, right, up, down, zoo, zee, va, va, voo. Make a star.
That was cool. Like, little things I did not expect.
Yeah.
At all. And, like, there's a few side quests. I mean, there's a few little things to do outside in the world to different islands to land at that have a few things. There's some mini games. There's a DS island that looks like a DS.
Yeah, and it has a very meta clue on it, too. If you dig where it says menu, I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
It's like, what does that mean?
You dig where it has where the one tab is on your screen on the island.
What'd you get?
Oh, yeah, what'd you get?
I think it was a treasure map.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't do anything on the island. I got there and I left.
I don't even think I found that island.
It's not on the map.
Oh.
It's a hidden island.
It's for fun.
That's why I never found it. I was just like, go here.
Nintendo likes to do that. They put their consoles in games in hidden ways.
Yeah.
That was not what I expected.
I think my favorite is Metroid Fusion with the Game Cubes in the corner of those fans. That's a really cool one.
There was a Mario Kart course, I believe, like on a GameCube as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Resident Evil Remake.
It was a battle course, yeah.
That's cool.
Resident Evil Remake, the Mo discs are GameCubes.
Oh, yeah!
Which is pretty cool.
Well, let's face it, that game initially came out on, the remake came out as a GameCube exclusive.
And if Capcom were true heroes, when they brought it to other consoles, they would have made it individually, like, you know, now it's a PS4. Now it's a PC. Now it's a Steam Deck.
They don't care enough.
That's a lot of work there you're asking for.
Keep it that way. They keep it that way. It's like, yeah, this is where it first showed up, losers.
I was just joking. just to be clear, I did not expect them to do that.
the dungeons all in this game are all pretty good. Like, you have the Wind Temple. I don't remember what the other ones were, but...
Somebody want to look it up, or do I have to go over and find my book? Thank
you. Temple of Fire, the Temple of Wind, the Temple of Courage, the Ghost Ship, the Goron Temple, the Temple of Ice, Mutaz Temple, and then, of course, Temple of the Ocean King.
Okay. I forgot about the Ghost Ship. That was a cool experience when you go on there and you have to rescue the girls.
Yeah.
I like that dungeon.
That was cool. I'm like, yeah, something's going to be bad. It's going to happen here. They're like, oh, you found our sister. And I'm like, yeah, this ain't going to end well.
Yeah, they were not very friendly. Subtle about that.
I liked it, though. Like, I liked it when you find out that they're evil. Like, that was
great. It was another reference to Little Women in Zelda.
Was it?
That Little Women, nice. Like the book?
Yes. Have you you never knew this. Ocarina of Time. The four sister ghost sisters, the Poe sisters. They have names. Amy, Beth. Oh, shit. I can't remember the rest right now, but... When they show up again in Majora's Mask, and even these ones, they do have names, but the names are references of the characters from Little Women.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's cool. See, we learned something new with Rich.
Yeah.
New segment. Fun fact.
You're going to expect me to do that next episode?
No, I'm not. But there'll be plenty of fun facts we don't ask for next episode. So I'm not about animals. So
we know what we're going to get. We're going to get it. We know what we're going to get next episode. Let's face it. He's going to comment on it.
I know. We'll talk about that next week. But the dungeons were all pretty fun. Like, I really had a good time with them. I thought they all made good use of the DS tech, too. We're having to use the microphone a couple times and just having to do things I didn't expect.
Yeah, and using various tools that you've earned along the way as part of your boss fights. I mean, that first boss... You had to.
What was it?
Well, I believe that was named Blaze.
Oh, that's that like vampire guy, right?
Yeah, but you had to hit him. You had to collect him, his three parts together in the specific order. And if you didn't notice it on the map, or you didn't really take a good notice of it until you figured it out by like by chance or anything, you had to hit them with the boomerang in order of one horn, two horn, three horn to merge them all together. So you could beat the crap out of him.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was really good.
It took me a while to figure out that that's what you had to do. Like, I was trying to blow into the microphone to put them out.
That's fair, but the game didn't make you do that to get in the place.
I was like, man, I just can't figure out this very obvious clue because I am stupid.
I use the internet, so I can't say anything.
Oh, yeah. As soon as I Googled it, I was like, oh, my God. But, like, that's so, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking the strategy guy.
You weren't thinking that it was going to do something so like simple in a way. Like, oh, look at the screen. They have one, two, three horns. Hit them in the right order. Then, like, I mean, I get it. I wouldn't have thought that either. My brain would have went to, I got to use a boomerang somehow. And I don't, because that's the item I got in this dungeon. So,
yeah, I needed, I just needed someone watching me play it to just be like, look at the screen, stupid. Like, ah.
There you have me. Somebody do to you like a Gibbs to the nose, a smack you upside the head.
And it was the second dungeon is the Wind Temple, right? And that's the one with the octopus guy.
Yeah, Temple of Wind.
Yep.
That was kind of fun. We had to put bombs in the cyclones and then the bombs ride up and hit them.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, you had a definite ply of bombs you could get. They avoid the, okay, we got 3 Dodongos here. You got 8 bombs. Don't fuck it up.
Well, I think they learned to make things a little bit easier.
Yeah, they did. I mean, like, because the enemies, almost every boss fight has something that will spawn that will then give you more stuff if you need it. So, yeah.
I think it's been that way in every Zelda game since Ocarina. Maybe even A Link to the Past.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's smart game design. You don't want people getting to a boss and then being SOL and have to die. Like, then they're not going to have fun with the game. You want them to at least. There's still a challenge. And now they have a new challenge or an obstacle to get more of whatever item you need, but it doesn't make it impossible.
Yeah. They don't necessarily, quote, fully hold your hand either and say, they're going to say eventually, are you really this bad at the game?
That's what I needed, though, Rich. I needed Navi. I grew up with Navi telling me, you know, giving me very strong hints.
Wouldn't it be funny, like, if you failed too many times, like, a golden question mark block appeared and you got, like, a Mario item that made you invincible?
I do love that. When that happened, I really do like it. Nobody's surprised.
They just give you the pee balloon. Yeah, like, just fly over this level.
Or the pee bombs that are infinite bombs and you can just use that for that boss.
What was the third boss in the Courage Temple? I can't remember.
Crake?
Yeah, it was Crake. He was a big crab. Yeah. The horseshoe crab kind of deal.
I don't remember him at all. I'm trying to find him in my watching because I do not remember what you're talking about.
Now I'm going to freaking look it up because I'm trying to.
You have to shoot an arrow at him.
Yeah.
Don't remember Crake.
You fire off an arrow and it withdraws into the shell. And then you.
Okay.
And then you have to throw a bomb at it.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
I am looking up. I'm looking at his boss strategy.
Oh, yes. Now I finally found him in the speedrun I'm watching. Now
I remember.
Completely forgot about him.
He's not a memorable boss.
There's a block puzzle in this, where there's multiple block puzzles, but one where you have to like shoot different eyeballs, your arrow, but you have to draw the square of where how the square travels. Stuff like that was really cool. He had a lot of really cool aspects to it. The boss fights were all pretty good. They were fun.
My two favorites are Gleok, and then especially Eox, the stone dude.
Oh, that one is fun.
You guys are right.
Like, that stone guy is so cool. Like, I loved it.
I think that was a good selling point for the game, too, because they always showed him in those commercials. Oh, did they? Yeah, I saw that one. I'm like, I really want to fight this guy.
Wait. It makes use of the two screens because you're on the bottom screen and you use the hammer to bounce up and so the top screen to hit these red things that are on him with the hammer. Like, it was a really cool aspect.
Yeah. And it was like almost 3D.
Yeah.
Like the camera switches, the camera angle switches. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was.
I forgot Krayek was a hermit crab that you had to like knock out of his shell and stuff. I completely forgot a lot about this guy.
Oh, I like the Goron boss too. That version of the Dongo. Dongorongo as he's called.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was one that you had to have help with, and then once he leaves, boom! Hey, we're back.
It has that cool. It's a really cool fake out moment.
I don't remember him.
Oh,
did you play this game?
I'm starting to wonder. I know I was there and I saw Mike the credits, but where the hell was I?
And I just got a reminder that the sisters in this game didn't have names, but you could obviously tell they were not to the Poe sisters. And
I know.
Before you go into the Goron temple, you have to like become a Goron, and you do like stuff for the Goron elder. And I wrote down in my notes here that I love when the Goron Elder gives you 146 rupees as a prize for completing the 6 questions, and then he goes, there's a donation fee of 146 rupees. I was like, you son of a bitch.
Okay, now I remember the Dongorongo. You're right, that was a really cool fight where you switch off between you and the Goron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
And then after the Goron heads into the next room with the metal, it's like, boom, I'm back.
That was really fun. Like, okay, I really appreciate it. And the ghost ship one, that's where you had to like bounce the orb back and forth between the sisters.
Yeah.
That was cool. And Eox was fun. Gliok, I had a hard time with Gliok.
Yeah, he's that difficult. Was the one but that... I just liked using the grappling hook, like in that way.
Oh yeah. Definitely was fun. I mean, it was basically, okay, get the rope, ricochet. Get the rope that way, ricochet.
It was cool.
Yeah. It really did use all the tools.
That's one thing that I feel this game doesn't get enough of a positive reputation for is the uniqueness and the bosses and stuff, because everyone always goes back to the Temple of the Ocean King. That's where discussions stop and it's like, oh, that wasn't, you know, the best experience. And they forget about all the other good experiences. And while there's very few, you know, Gliok is a recurring boss, but like there's so many original bosses. And even just recently playing it, you know, I forgot. What was that again? And it's like, that's a shame because they did original bosses with original ideas that are just forgotten about.
This was kind of a game that I remember a lot of people talking shit about over the years. And that's one reason I wasn't as interested in it. Plus, it was so DS dependent and I wasn't a DS guy. I had one, but I didn't really care for DS.
Yeah.
It wasn't my thing. And now that I have a flash card, I'm trying to go back and play a lot of old DS games that I skipped this entire, you know, history of it. Like this whole generation, I did not play anything really off the DS. And
there's so many good games on the DS.
I'm working on it. I'm getting a couple. Yeah. I got another one actually planned for April for a mini that I'm doing. But like I'm trying to get around to so many of them I missed. And this had been on my list forever. Like I was actually going to buy this in the Wii U at some point for $10. I'm like, well, I'll play it on the Wii U. But then I didn't use the Wii U at all. So I just never got around to it.
And I keep telling him he's got to play the Layton series of games.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
I actually have a couple of them on my flash card.
You got to play Feel the Magic XYXX.
Oh, that, yeah, absolutely. And I'll don't forget the sequel, Rub Rabbits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, Mike. You do the Layton games, I'll join you for those.
I know.
I've played all seven.
We'll see.
New one coming out.
Yeah.
I should, just because it's another series. I mean, I'm so many games. I'm really trying to make an effort to get stuff off my backlog and experience things like this game. I mean, this only happened because I wanted to experience something that I had missed. I had bought this game actually a long time ago for DS, which I actually looked for my copy. But I don't have it anymore for a friend of mine that I was living with, and she didn't like it. She's like, she likes Zelda, but it was just, and she liked DS game, but this was too much for her, and I never tried it. And
because. You know, for all of its pluses, it's just got that one major setback.
I don't think she got that far. I think it was just she just didn't like the controls and everything like that. So
that was another hurdle. Some people didn't like the controls, and it's, you know, that's unfortunate. But
yeah,
they do grow on you for sure.
It takes a bit, but then I got really good at it. The only, like, go back to the boss fight. The only one I had a hard time with was Gliok. I had a hard time getting to bounce the orbs back and forth for some reason. But I think that was more of a me problem with the controls. But yeah, I mean, they grew on me a lot. I mean, there were times I screwed up and put the bow out and shot with a bow and I meant to slash with a sword or something stupid, but that was a me problem. I mean, I know you can use the buttons to do some of the item switching, but I didn't bother with that. I know you can.
Yeah.
Even the Sunken Temple, if you just use a YouTube guide, it's really fun.
If you don't have the strategy guide.
Yeah, but YouTube is so much simpler just to watch videos and copy what they did with commentary. The guy was telling me what he's doing. I'm like, this is great. He's telling me why he's doing it. I'm like, this is wonderful. I've experienced the game the way I want to.
I didn't use the YouTube guides. In fact, I hardly ever opened my... Well, I used the book in much as a guideline of where to go, and I was bored, or really stuck. But otherwise, I played this sort of seat of the pants, which is a good way to play Zelda games if you played them before. Yeah, see if your mind serves you well.
No problem with that. And then like the whole idea is, what was the first set of quests? Oh, the first set of quests is the three power, wisdom, courage, right? Essentially, yep. To get the fairies, and then you're trying to get three medals so then you can
craft
get
the sword.
The sword. I like it that it wasn't the Master Sword in this, and there's no Ganon or Ganondorf.
Yeah, because Ganondorf is dead. He's at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, which I really appreciated that.
With Link's Master Sword thumped in his head.
I didn't realize how much I was going to appreciate the fact that he wasn't in this.
Yeah.
I was surprised, but I really did. I'm like, this is nice that he's not here. Sometimes it's nice for a Zelda game to have different villains.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Most of the handheld ones, too.
Yeah. And Bellum's cool.
Bellum is cool.
I like his design. Bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, before we go to Bellum, there are a couple sea boss fights, too, that you do, or at least one of them.
We don't have to talk about that.
That wasn't so bad, fighting the big purple monster. You just shoot. I liked it. Shoot the cannon.
I don't know. I had a big issue, like, whenever he shot those energy balls, like, just trying, like, I would tap on them to shoot the cannon, and my cannon, like, the ball would just go over the attack, and I would just take a hit. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't have any problems, actually.
I didn't really have much problem with them either. It's like, oh, monster in the ocean. I got a cannon. Boom, 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 boom,
and
boom. Bye.
I came into it by accident, too, because I wasn't in good health when I started that fight because I wasn't expecting it. So,
this is the episode where I really find out I'm bad at video games.
This is the guy that has how many platinum, sir?
No, the game is just poorly designed.
I didn't have any problems.
Maybe I was just missing that extra thump, you know, with the platinum on the way to make you just go. I mean, hell, didn't you beat? Yeah. I know you've done some insane feats on this podcast for platinum.
Yeah, I have.
Heavy Rain.
Yeah, but I mean, once you turn the controller like a steering wheel, that part's really easy.
I don't think really easy is the correct term for it. But
this is one of those Zelda games that, while it's trying to beat, you can beat it relatively, it's not impossible to get to the end.
No, it's not too bad. I don't think any of them are really that hard. I mean, they all have some challenge, but they're all, I feel, very doable.
I will not play Adventure of Link without save states.
Oh, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
After I do Spirit Tracks, that will be the only Zelda game I've never beaten.
You should play it and beat it. Just do not play it without save states.
But I have tried. I tried on the Switch online, and I was using, there's a really cool YouTube channel called You Can Beat Video Games, and he plays retro games and just, shows you, in-depth strategies. And I tried to follow along, and I still just got my ass kicked. I was like, I can't do this.
Even on the Switch, not only save states, you have the rewind feature, too.
Yeah,
but it's so hard. I'm so bad at it.
It's a hard game. I mean, I did actually beat that game with the rewind feature.
Dang.
And save states on the Switch.
I have beaten all the Zelda games that I have owned, except Adventure of Link and Triforce Heroes. Mainly because Adventure of Link, I cannot get to the final castle.
It's hard.
I may want to retry it with an emulator one day.
You should.
Just Switch Online.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, Switch Online is a really good way to play it, but
I'd have to pay for that.
$20 for a year, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I'm always subscribed to that, and I just don't bother to even, I don't use it often, but I'm like, eh, whatever.
It's real cheap.
And Triforce Heroes.
I have a legit copy of Triforce Heroes behind me.
Is Triforce Heroes canon, though?
Yes,
are we counting that?
Yes, it is.
Fuck. Okay, well, I haven't beat Triforce Heroes, then.
I have actually beaten Triforce Heroes.
It's a fun game.
With friends.
It's more of a game that you could... it's easier if you have friends.
Yes, 100%.
Oh, yeah. It's bad if you don't.
It is a fun game, though. Like that.
Yeah, there are some fun things to it.
I tried playing it with friends, but we were having a lot of internet issues. And timing issue, scheduling issues, and this is pre-podcast, and it's just so many internet issues.
Yeah, and I don't have a copy of Tears of the Kingdom yet, so.
Yeah, Tears is awesome. But yeah, you should, honestly, Triforce Heroes with two friends is so much fun. It's just like Four Swords, playing Four Swords with friends. Both Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures is a lot of fun.
I've beaten Four Swords Adventures.
You ever beat Four Swords? They're two different games.
No.
Ah, never. There's another one you didn't beat.
And again, that was more designed to have four people play.
Yes,
to be as a solo.
They re-released it as the anniversary edition with solo content and designed for solo.
They did?
And it was free on 3DS for a long time.
It was DSi, but you could play it on the 3DS.
Oh, really? I have it on my 3DS.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can find it in the wild.
I mean, it's never released physically, and it's, since the shops are down, you can't legally download it anymore.
Yeah, but I'm sure it exists somewhere else, so.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, and they added a lot of stuff. They added Zelda 1 levels and A Link to the Past levels in that as well, which was really cool.
And I'm slowly, much faster this year apparently, trying to do more Zelda catalog for this podcast because I skipped. I needed to. Like, I love Zelda. There's not enough of it on this show for some reason.
I will join you for
yes.
most Zeldas.
I love Zeldas.
Yeah.
So it's happening. I did Breath of the Wild last year. This year I have this planned.
We have Spirit Tracks. I know you did Majora's Mask.
Yes.
You did the original Legend of Zelda.
We did. Yeah. Wind Waker. Oracles. Which one?
You did the two Oracle games.
Yeah. That was good. Those are good games, actually.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. Did he do Link's Awakening yet or not?
Yeah, I did the Game Boy Color version. I'm going to do the Switch version at some point, too. Just because. But yes.
I could join for that one.
It won't be this year. I already have this year. This year, we're doing this. You get Spirit Tracks. You get Wind Waker. And you get Calamity Warriors, is that the name?
Age of Calamity.
Age of Calamity, yeah. You get that one. Mm. That's what people are going to listen to this year. And then we'll see how next year goes. But I'm trying to get more done. I need to replay the Twilight Princess. But again, I'm waiting for Switch to re-release it so I can play the HD version and not the GameCube.
Maybe this year. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
I would buy it, unfortunately, if they do it, because I'm a sucker for Zelda. It's the one thing where I will break down and buy. So
we were talking about how this game is real easy to, or it's not too bad to get to the end. And I know I said it in the group chat before, but I do want to bring up that there is a review on Metacritic for this game that an outlet gave it a 10. And then the little highlight blurb says, this game is not perfect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why are you giving it a 10?
Why? Yeah, you know.
9.5.
Yeah, 9.5 exists.
Like, a 10 is supposed to be for a perfect game. Yeah. I mean, there are some that are perfect.
No, there's no perfect games. It's always
perfect enough where you give it a 10.
Yeah.
But like Ocarina at the time. Still
Phantom Hourglass, I would not have given a 10 to after
playing. No.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, no, there are a few games that I feel really deserve that, but not many. I mean, there are movies I consider perfect movies, like Mission Impossible 1, Jurassic Park 1, Indiana Jones Raiders, like, but
I would give Chained Echoes a perfect 10.
Oh, that was a 10.
What?
Yeah.
God, I hated Chained Echoes.
Really?
I could not get into it.
Oh, man.
I just did not like it. Sea of Stars was the better RPG from that.
Yeah. See, I have a little grudge against Sea of Stars because like it got way more hype and stuff, and I'm like, you guys didn't play Chained Echoes. You guys missed out on Chained Echoes.
Chained Echoes was fucking great. I do want to play. I really do want to play Sea of Stars. It won't be happening this year, but I do really want to play it. I got too much to do.
The completionist gets to ask if you have any donations and
stuff. Not anymore. I love that you got taken out of that. It cracks me up so much. Who would have thought YouTube fame turns out that some people are assholes? Who would have thought?
Weird. Oh, please. We've known people were assholes before YouTube.
Yeah, I know. It's just funny that so many people that like got famous on YouTube turned out to be really shitty people because they don't. Well, again, you're not. I don't think you're. I'll make it very short, but I don't think you're just trained right to understand what to do with the fame that you got.
No one goes to your head. Trained.
Well, no, but I feel like if you're in different in more movie industry or something like that, there's more people around you to kind of be like, this is how you have to, you know, there's a little bit more to it.
It's like a coaching, like here's how to act, here's how to deal with this, here's how to field these questions.
Plus, there's more companies that are paying you all this money that are making you famous, that are going to pay you to make sure you don't make yourself an idiot in front of them to embarrass them. But when you're a YouTuber, it's you. You're the guy. Like you can like nobody else is coaching you.
In the era of social media, it is much easier to find out what an ass somebody is.
Oh, yeah.
Only if you choose to let people know.
See, people don't have self-control and they just get into the motion or into their feelings, like the heat of the moment. So if someone says something that they disagree with, they'll instantly respond without thinking. Maybe there's some repercussions. And once it's out on the internet, it's out there forever.
Yeah.
And then you also have the people who are just assholes to begin with. I mean, let's face it. I've heard so many things about, like, if you say an actor who you don't want to work with, some people can immediately spout a name out. And I think a lot of people would say Chevy Chase is one you don't want to work with because he's so full of himself.
There's divas everywhere.
I mean, that's different. I'm talking more like there's the pro Jared thing. I mean, it turned out not to be, you know, true. But just like stuff like that where it's like...
internet culture where people like in America, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But on the internet, you are guilty and if you're proven innocent. People don't like apologize. They just
like I I looked it up and I was watching something like, oh, okay. It turned out that he wasn't like what we, you know, he didn't do what people like, the accusations weren't true.
Yeah, he was innocent.
He still cheated on his wife, but that's, I mean, that's okay, whatever. Like, you know, I don't agree with it, but hey,
depending
that's
on the
problem.
Accusation, you're guilty until even when proven innocent. Yes,
and that's an issue, but there's other ones that are much dumber. I know JonTron did some dumb shit and stuff like that, so. But yeah, just don't be an ass. Like, just you know, don't wake up like, yeah, I'm gonna put something on social media. I'm gonna, don't, you know, if it's racist or something like it, you know, maybe just keep it to yourself. But people are stupid. we should talk about the final boss fight.
Yeah.
Speaking of assholes,
he was an asshole. He was. I wasn't expecting a 3-part fight either. By the way,
at least you have. At least it's a 3-part fight that. You can't break between parts. Yeah, you have checkpoints. You can break between parts.
I am thankful that was there. I would have had a much harder time because that third fight was kicking my ass.
Oh, yeah. The third part of the fight is the toughest.
Until I understood what to do.
Yeah, it was tough. But then once you figure out that you don't have to slash, you can just tap the screen, makes that part so much easier.
I still had a hard time because you got there before me, Nate, and I read your comment. You're like, oh yeah, don't slash. I'm like, okay, so I didn't slash, but I still had a hard time until I realized I had to keep attacking him in his third form to get him to then release her so I could then get the orb and do what I had to do.
Yeah.
It took a bit. I had to watch a video, and then the video, I would see what he did, and then I figured it out. Or I just copied what I saw.
Yeah, it's a tough battle, but it also shows that when it comes down to it, Linebeck can do the brave thing.
Because the third form, after you fought Bellum twice, we'll talk about it too, but the we're already on this one, he ends up taking him over and turns him into like a big, like a Phantom Knight type enemy, essentially the design of what you've seen earlier.
Yeah, but he does eventually, you're sort of trying to save him too, because let's face it, had he not done what he did when he did it, you would have been screwed. The game would have been.
What did he do again?
He stabbed Bellum.
Oh, okay. I did find it amusing that the final boss takes over Linebeck, and you kind of have to technically fight Linebeck. That did amuse me because I did not like that guy. So
I was really worried I was going to break my touchscreen tapping so much. Like, I was like, I am just tapping in this one spot. Like,
but I like it. It shows growth for his character.
Yeah.
One of those things. I mean, even if you complete all the battles with Jolene, you start seeing some growth.
The Jolene Pyre stuff was interesting, too.
Yeah.
I don't like how when you said Jolene, the first thing that popped my head was not Jolene in this game. It was Jolene. That's what popped in my head. So.
Yeah, I knew that was going to pop in your head.
It's been a while since I heard the song, but that immediately came in my head.
Yeah.
But it was a cool fight. I mean, it just took me a bit to get the... And I kept having a really hard time drawing an hourglass while trying not to get killed.
Really hard. Yeah. That's fun. I forgot about that part.
Tricky. Timing is everything there.
Yeah, I can't draw, apparently. Because I was really failing a whole lot of time trying to draw the way they wanted me to. I'm like, what do you want from me?
This is not a game for artists. This is a game for... Let's just get done, you know?
Well, you're just drawing it. You just have to draw a figure eight, essentially. But I don't know why I keep doing it wrong.
Like, my problem with that, and then, like, even switching items on the go, is that you have to stop moving Link to, like, you know, do any of that stuff. So you risk getting hit because you're not, like, moving out of the way.
Yeah. I guess you could hit him, but it was just annoying.
It's a tricky, but it's worthy of a final boss battle.
It is. And the second phase of Bellum, where you have to fight the ghost ship and just keep, and you're in the ship and you're in a ship battle essentially, where you're just shooting all the different. That was cool too.
Yeah, both
of them. Wasn't as good, but it was cool.
Each level was its own challenge, which is a good thing for a final boss.
It was.
Culmination of everything too.
Yeah. It was a really good final boss fight.
Yeah, I mean, a final boss fight that is just easy to beat. It's like, why?
Sometimes I don't complain about that.
Oh, you mean like Star Fox Adventures where you push the A button and General dies?
It's Lockluster.
Hey, that's also on this podcast somewhere if you want to listen to that.
I played through a game, Lore of the Temptress. I get to the final battle. It plays out automatically.
I don't mind that sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes I don't mind it either, to be honest.
I wish Uncharted 1, that final boss fight, played out like that, where you didn't have to do anything, because fuck that final boss fight. But that's neither here nor there.
I mean, I was disappointed on that one, because, like, Yeah, I just fought this guard to get to you. I'm expecting a bow. No, automatic.
Yeah, sometimes it depends on the game. Like, some games just don't expect boss fights. Oh, but the best fight of Bellum, which is the one I purposely waited on, is the first form, where you fight and you have to go up the stairs and do different tools, like shoot him with the arrow, use the hook shot. That was really well done.
Yeah, that was a very well done battle. It's tricky to a degree, but you can pull it off. And I love the multiple level aspect. It's something that they didn't do that often in Zelda games until like the 3DS and that.
I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that fight going up and down the stairs and how everything just kept like, it was just a really cool, unique fight that, and the fact that you could, you know, and they made good use of the two screens.
Yeah.
This would have been, had I played this in a Steam Deck, this would have been not the same.
No,
it would have looked really bad too.
For an extra challenge, run up and down a set of stairs while you do that boss fight.
Oh, God.
So it's like 4D, you know.
36-year-old Mike would not be okay, unfortunately.
I couldn't do that at my age.
Yeah, and you actually have to grab a bow and arrow and fire an arrow too while you're trying to do it on the DS.
Get the real 4D experience.
Yeah.
Should I jump down the stairs? Well, I just can't jump down. I was gonna say,
and then you should summon a tentacle being through your basement.
Oh,
I knew that basement toilet was useful for something.
It was just, but it was a really fun fight. And one thing that that I also want to bring up, when you get the new sword, you can finally kill phantoms in the Sunken Temple.
Oh, that's so good.
That was one of those feelings like, man, if that would be like Metroid Dread, let me just be able to shoot an Emmy and just kill it instantly. The same type of just satisfaction.
You kind of get that at the end of Metroid Dread.
You kill them when you get the weapon, but that's not the same. What are we talking about?
I'm talking about like the very end of the game.
Yeah, the very, very end you get.
Yeah, Metroid Dread.
Where you're just like huge laser blasts.
Oh, do you fight enemies in that very end? I can't remember.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but it's very satisfying.
Yeah, but it would have been more set. I just kind of give you an example. Like those are some of the most hated enemies that I have fought in games of this podcast. Right? Emmys and these phantoms were, God, I feel good to kill them. Whew.
I just thought it was a little extreme when you got your new coworker Emmy and you just started like screaming. You were like, no, that joke wasn't that good, but thank you.
I was confused by your joke, so it's okay. Oh, the Emmys were just, but no, it was so good. It felt so good to kill the phantoms. And I like how that plays a part in it in the dungeons too, where if you kill them all, you get chests. And then you also have the whiz robes in this game, which are like, look like little birds with sickles. That was cool too.
Oh, those guys were.
They take your time away, but if you kill them, they give you more time.
So. Yeah.
They were cool. And they were like booze, or you couldn't be facing them. You had to do the spin attack, which I had a really hard time getting the spin attack off in this game sometimes.
Spin attack?
You know, where you draw a circle on the circle.
I didn't have spin attack. You know what I did? I shot him or threw a boomerang at him.
Oh, okay.
Shoot him with an arrow.
Oh, are you talking? You're talking about the little eyeballs.
No.
You shot the wizard with arrows too, but you can't shoot him when you're looking at him. Oh, I guess you shot the arrow and turned around.
Throw a boomerang, or the arrow will hit them even if you're not looking at them and they're invisible.
Okay, that's cool. All right.
I didn't know you could hit them when they were invisible.
I didn't either.
I thought you had to like.
Well, you see them on the map. You will always see the skull of where they are on the map.
I didn't know they were hurtable. Vulnerable is the correct word, not hurtable, but we'll go with hurt. I like hurtable.
Yeah, I thought you had to bait them out and then.
Me too. That's what I did. And sometimes I needed those 30 seconds back because I already took them. But they were cool. No, the Sunken Temple grew on me, especially in the last time, especially with the video guide. But I can see why people hate it, which we're going to hear about shortly. But it doesn't, in my opinion, it's not as bad as now that I'm done with the game and looking back at it, like it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's the way it is. A lot of people, you know, just harp on that one thing. But when you do it, you're like, you know what? People blew this out of proportion.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to hear about that shortly, but yes.
It's definitely something that acts as a major down. Like in the pros and cons. Pro, great exploring. Pro, you can customize your ship. Pro, you can do this. Pro, you can do this. Con, that temple.
Yeah.
For some reason, that temple con weighs more heavily than all the pros for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, well...
I think a lot of people just haven't played this game either in a long time because it's never been re-released. So, I mean, you really have to have a DS. At this point, you have to have a DS. I mean, there are other ways to play it, but you're not going to get the same experience.
Yeah, that's probably part of it, a good part of it.
To be fair, you could play it on the 3DS too with the physical cart.
Yes, but I'm...
Well, that's what I was playing it on.
Same. I was 3DS XL. But yeah, I mean, without having that, like, there's... And for a lot of people, they're not going to, like, you have to track down a cartridge, which is not... I mean, hell, Nate, you said you got this for $40 and that was a deal.
Yeah.
That's not, in my opinion, it's not a deal for a game from 2007, but it is.
Hey.
Fortunately.
Yeah, it's better than, like, $130.
Oh, is that what it's going for now?
No, but, like, I know there's some Dragon Quest DS games that I want to get that are, like, around, like, a remake of 4, I think.
There's DS games worth, like, $400, so.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of DS games that are just way expensive.
Yeah, which, and it's one of those systems where it's really hard, like, you have to have the DS to really make it work. Like, these aren't easy things to port either. Like, you can't, if you ported Phantom Hourglass to anything else, like, I guess you could, it wouldn't be the same. Even on a Switch, it still wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's a hard one that I don't really foresee coming, getting re-released in any, unless they completely remade it, and I don't see that happening. Plus, that would take away some of the charm. Mm. It's a DS game. Like, it's made for that, and I'm so happy that I was able to play this on a flash card and play this on legit hardware. I got a good experience that I wouldn't have had. Like, I'm really thankful that I didn't try to emulate this and play it with the regular controls, because it would have taken away something from this game for sure.
I just looked up some of the highest priced DS games out there, and one was one that just completely surprised me.
What was it?
Number 2, The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess demo.
Yeah, that's not a game. It's just a demo cart. It's not even a demo cart. It's a movie.
I was like, hold on. It's a movie. The Twilight Princess demo for the DS.
It's just a movie.
Collectors are weird, okay?
Only around 500 were made.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of cool, though.
It's not a game, though.
But it's not worth it.
No, it's a collector's item.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just stupid.
That's like, if I had that, and when I die, if I was like, I'm giving this to my kids would be like, why the fuck am I getting the Twilight Princess demo on the DS, Dad?
Watch this on YouTube.
they would be like, Dad, just sell it and give me the money. I'd rather have that.
Right. Oh, that you reminded me of something funny today. So I went to a toy swap, and I saw a G.I. Joe that I used to play with constantly. Like, it was one I really liked. Inbox, $300. And I'm like, man.
Yeah.
And it made me think about that. Like, well.
Our childhood is profitable.
I mean, I didn't buy it. I was no interest in buying it. I'm like, I had that G.I. Joe. Another one I had, I remember playing with. Like, oh, it was $60 in box, brand new. And I'm like,
hey, it's only just recently I'm learning that one of my tastes in cartoons was actually pretty damn good. So,
one random thing I also about Toy Swap. When somebody had a monster stuffed animal, I forget the name. It had a big blue nose, purple monster with chains on his hands, and the guy was like $900 firm. And you won't be surprised nobody was offering. Nobody
you
was
mean
asked,
a My Pet Monster.
The what?
You're talking My Pet Monster?
I think so. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, he wanted 900, and it wasn't a box or anything, but he wanted 900 for it. So
no, it could be what the going price is. Or
I mean, I'm sure it is. Like, the toy swap I go to is pretty good about pricing. I've gotten some really good deals on stuff. They sell Amiibos there too, and I always look for ones that I want. But you know, they're usually pretty, they're fair price. They're not like, they don't try to gouge people because they'll hear about it. So it's a good community up here.
God, I feel old now.
All right, anything else we missed about Phantom Hourglass before we're going to questions, comments, or memories?
I don't think so.
No.
I have one really nerdy thing. I watched a trailer for this game, and the UI for the ship navigation is different. It looks like there were originally 3 speeds instead of stop and go.
Huh. I wonder if it overcomplicated things and they took it out.
Yeah, it could have. But I just thought that was interesting from the trailer, you know? Just like,
I mean, at least the 3 speed type things show back up in, well, not 3 speeds, but positioning like speed. You could go forward and reverse with spirit tracks. Made more sense with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see them just simplifying it with stop and go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just super into, like, I don't know. I've been watching early a 3 builds. Hour and 40 minute. Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Okay. All right. Let me pull up some. I had a lot of people comment about this game, actually. So let's see what we got.
Oh, wait, Mike, I'm so sorry.
Yes. No, please.
One more note. When Oshis, the grandpa, is telling you about Bellum, he's holding up the paintings, and I laughed out loud.
Oh.
Like, you know, like the paintings that make up the cutscene. I laughed out loud when I saw that. I was like, that's so funny.
Oh, wasn't Oshis also a big whale in the end?
Yes.
Okay. Because when you kill Bellum, you find out that he was a whale.
Probably related to the windfish.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Oh, I didn't even think of the windfish.
One of the best Zelda games ever made. One of my favorite, at least.
Hey, Link's Awakening was the first Zelda game I ever owned.
One of the best. Easy. All right. And from the official Laser Time community, from first comment from Andrew Harbour, Spirit Tracks is by far the superior DS Zelda game, but Phantom Hourglass has a lot of appeal, in my opinion. Explore the scenes, seas again was a lot of fun, while revisiting the same dungeon over and over again is a major point of contention. I think having the time limit adds a lot of stress that makes accomplishing it seem like a bigger deal than completing your average Zelda dungeon. From James Fretz, I despise this game almost as much as Skyward Sword. Stylus controls did me in. At first, I was in that boat, but then I got used to it, and I actually really liked it.
I don't know. I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Skyward Sword. I mean, I beat Skyward Sword.
I've never played Skyward Sword yet.
I liked Skyward Sword. Well, you can play on the Switch. You can do both regular.
I actually have a copy on the Switch. I bought it a while ago for $40, and that was a deal, in quotations. So, yeah, one day.
That is a deal.
I know. That's what upsets me. It upsets me when $40 for a...
I know all these games that these workers, we should be paying like $5 and these workers work on ramen to build up these games.
I just feel that I should be able to get your game for $20 after it's been out for a few years. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so all the development time that you've done to enhance the game and update it and fix the controls. And now you don't need to be paid for that. Your children can starve. Give me the game for free.
Hey, man, I don't make the rules. I don't know. I'm just, because I wait for games. I buy games so many years later. I'm always like, well, it shouldn't be $60 now. But that's Nintendo. So, you make valid points.
I mean, shit, Link's Awakening is an old game that they remade, but fuck. Paid for nothing, you know, but why'd you remake it? It's an old game, you know?
I'm fine with that part. It's when that remake has been released for X amount of years, I feel like it should eventually go down in price.
So
if you want to think about it.
If something sells, it doesn't go down in price.
So no, I know.
Happen when things stop selling.
Also, let's think about it. Paying $40 for a game now and paying $40 for a game back then, you're actually paying a lot more. The prices may seem the same, but let's face it, a $40 game back in the 1990s.
How long in 2006?
Yeah, 2006.
For example, face it. You're talking, price may seem the same, but it's not the same.
And also, the salaries go up for everything, so it costs more to make games now, and it's...
And you got to pay the CEOs?
Well, see, Nintendo, you don't. Nintendo CEO...
I know, there's the only one that makes a reasonable wage.
Yeah.
I saw a meme where he made $2 million and Bobby Kotick made $125 million. Like, yeah, here's an issue right here.
Exactly. And Nintendo took... Iwata took a pay cut when the 3DS launched. Bones poor. He took a 50% pay cut until things got better to help the company and to help morale and to use that money to reinvest in fixing the 3DS's problem.
Yeah, because he was a good person.
You don't see that with other CEOs and you don't see that with other companies. So that's where, you know, again, like Mario Kart, for example, is still full price. Like, why is Mario Kart still full price? Because it's sold. And if it's something is still selling and they could sell for $60, no company on the planet is going to say, let's lower when we're still selling for $60. No, not if they're selling. Ubisoft lowers it because people stop buying there's a pattern. People know, like Assassin's Creed, if you want to get it right at a launch, you're going to pay. But if you don't care, wait a month or two and you'll get it at 50% off.
I know, it's sad how that happens, Ubisoft, how quick it happens. But
that's their pattern. Even with Mario and Rabbids, same thing, it goes down in price. You know, Nintendo, they don't need to because they'll lower to $10 if they need to do something special because people will buy it. People want those games, want those experiences.
Hey, you know, I could buy a Zelda-like right now for $10 on the Steam shop called Super Dungeon Maker, and I could play that instead.
Or you could buy our physical that we have of Super Dungeon Maker, which is fantastic.
But it won't work on my Steam Deck.
It'll work on your Switch, though.
Yeah, but it's not my Steam Deck. But I do, ever since you mentioned that game when I saw you guys publishing, I've always been curious to play it. So
it's so good.
It looks really good. No, I don't buy physical carts because I don't really buy it. So I don't buy anything premium edition, but I always keep track of what you guys publish because if you're publishing it, it's got to be good. So I always go after it on Steam.
That's fine. You're supporting the developer. We're happy with that.
So, all right. And then from Raymond Carrier. Oh, man, I remember getting so frustrated with a puzzle. I was trying too hard to solve it, pushing everywhere on my touchscreen, trying a bunch of different button combinations until I finally got frustrated and close the DS, putting into sleep mode. A few hours later, when I calm down, I open it up again to see the animation of the stamp go back up to the top screen, leaving a mark on my map. Spirit Tracks has the rare honor of being the only game of the DS and one of the few games overall where turning off your system in some way is a solution to a puzzle. This was Phantom Hourglass, but yes. From Charles Morgan. My biggest problem with the DS Zelda is the touchscreen controls were using a gimmick for the gimmick's sake. It's subtractive. It's not better than traditional controls. It's different and worse. It makes the whole experience feel loose and sloppy. You can't talk about this game without mentioning the biggest criticism. The game's central dungeon, the Temple of the Ocean King. Yes, you go back to it multiple times throughout the game, but each subsequent visit is different. And that is all finding new shortcuts using the latest item you found. The item you save us the shortcut then lets you delve deeper into dungeon to find the next chart, find next item to find more shortcuts to delve deeper, etc. It was a really cool concept. Did they stick the landing? Shrugs. I mean, you grew on me, but yeah, I get it. I completely get it. Right. And from Ryan Cottrell. The DS was a bit of a lost generation for me as I didn't really have any money for games. I was working a lot of crazy hours just to make ends meet. At the time, I picked this up a couple months ago for the first time, was frankly really disappointed. Like others have mentioned, the touchscreen controls has really ruined it for me. I'm sure I'll pick it up again at some point, but I may have to look into a D-pad mods for when I do. Mm. It's better than... It grew on me.
It grows on you. It's just different and people are afraid of different. That's it. It's like, oh, this isn't traditional. Okay, we'll try it.
And from Ivan Williams, I think this game is why I dislike roguelikes. It was a good game, but going through the same dungeon was meh. Roguelikes are so different than this, though.
Yeah.
I would play a Zelda roguelike.
I would, too. Who am I kidding? So.
Well, Candace of Hyrule is kind of like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then if they added deck building to it, perfection. 10 out of 10.
Deck building's dangerous for me. I found out, so. Marvel Snap has taught me I have problems with deck building, so. From the Legend of Zelda fans group, from Brian Hillary. Soundtrack and sound effects were super limited and repetitive. They fixed this in Spirit Tracks, at least. I don't remember it being an issue, but then again, I also played a lot of this mute, so. But I didn't have an issue when I had it on. From Rivian Martinson, this was the first Zelda game I finished. I thought the music was lovely. I still throw on some of my favorites from time to time. Lineback is probably one of my favorite Zelda characters. I love how grumpy he was. Objectively, I understand it's far from the best Zelda game, but it's definitely one I hold close to my heart. Some of the gameplay is infuriating. I think it would benefit a lot from a remake like SS. Oscar Award. Unfortunately, I don't even ever see that happening, considering it isn't a super popular title or super important to the timeline. From Sean Fox, I thought it was okay. I was annoyed by the control scheme as well, but the story is decent and scratched my itch for some Wind Waker nostalgia. From Morgan Grippen, does this work on a 3DS? Yes, it does. That's how I played it. From Steven Ingram, I love this game. The fishing was my favorite part. This is also the only game I ever gotten my dad to play. He found it pretty fun. Also, the one dungeon you have to keep going back to was kind of the only thing I didn't like about it. You guys notice a trend here?
Yeah. I like how the one person said the music terrible, and the next person's like, I love the music. It's awesome. So it just shows you how you can't please everyone.
No, music is so subjective.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, so subjective. It's just based on whatever the person likes. So you just never know with music. And from the Zelda fan group, from Jacob Davis, I enjoyed accomplishing this treacherous voyage, but that was around 2011, I believe. 2014 was nearly my end. October 1st of the 14 year, I would end up in a nasty freak car accident. Fair judgment to say, due to my brain damage, my memory of video games is whack.
Ouch. Sorry to hear that.
I said, hey, this game will always be linked to that then. You know, unfortunately, but that's, you know, that happens. A game will just be part of, you know, some part of your life in a way that you don't always expect. From Idio Sodi, I enjoyed it. I tried Spirit Tracks and couldn't stand it. I am curious of Spirit Tracks when we get there.
Oh, I love Spirit Tracks.
Okay. Yeah, it's. I think Spirit Tracks does have a few pluses over.
I like it over Phantom Hourglass, personally.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's got a train. Yeah. Real train heads, you know.
Yeah.
Show it to my grandpa.
I'm excited to finally get around to it. So it's again, been on my list forever.
Yeah.
From Matthew Paul, this is one of my favorite Zelda games and the first Zelda game I properly played through beginning to end. The puzzles are so much fun and it has this, to this day, my favorite puzzle in all of Zelda. It's so simple, yet if you don't read the wording carefully and think of every last possibility, you would just be unable to do anything. It just says, make an exact copy of the map and you have to figure out how to do this when your map is on the touchscreen. You can't use that to draw. It's so simple, but it shows how immersive a game can be.
True.
And last group, I have a couple to read from Giant Bomb. From Andrew Turner, has one of the greatest puzzles in Zelda history. I'm not going to spoil anything. If you know, you know. It took a, which I just mentioned, but it took a bit before I realized what he was talking about.
Yeah.
From Matt Benoit, love that game so much. All right, from Andy Bolsover, people really love the DS, but for me, it was similar to the Wii. mostly full of bad games with gimmicky controls that were worse for the use of the stylus and touchscreen, and this is very evident with the Zelda games. The stylus control works, but would anyone really prefer to play it this way? The stylus touchscreen was great for rhythm games or puzzle adventures, but not for this kind of thing. I disagree.
How do we ban that guy?
I mean, not in my group, so that's fine. It's a group that I posted it. Trying to get
speech. Get in touch with the admins. I think that's technically hate speech there.
I mean, I get it. I've been more in that boat. Like, I was a guy that had been very upset about touchscreens, very upset about... I've complained a lot about the Wii. That's why I never played Mario Galaxy, really. And I just...
So good.
I know I'm missing. But, you know, it's something that sometimes just works. Like, for me, I was like, this is stupid. And then after about 4 hours of playing, I'm like, this ain't that stupid anymore. And by the time I beat the game, this is kind of fun. Like, you know, it went through its phases.
You'll have no problem with Spirit Tracks then.
You think I will?
Mm. Oh, you won't. You won't have, because you've done this. It's the same.
Okay. I'm really excited for Spirit Tracks. This is, again, another Zelda game that I never thought I'd play. So I'm excited. All right. And then I have one last comment to read. This one's a little bit long. From Alex Wilkie. The main thing that everyone complains about this one is really overblown. That one dungeon you keep going back to isn't an exercise repetition, because the items you got every time you return to it utterly trivializes the part you've done before. Still, it's not a fantastic game, serviceable proof of a concept for a touch-controlled Zelda game, sure. But nobody talks about this, the sequel, Spirit Tracks, is much more enjoyable. Phantom Hourglass's greatest sin is probably a story/world, but it could have been a game about exploring new lands beyond the borders of Wind Waker's Great Sea. And at first it seems like it, but then it revealed at the end to be all taking place in some weird pocket universe, which wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't for this contradictory appearance of various characters and races from Wind Waker in this world. As usual, it's a Zelda sequel that only informed by imagery from the series, completely ignoring any established story. Oh yeah, I forgot that when you do rescue Terra, it turns out the whole game took place in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Well, at least we see, but we also saw, like, in that ending, they see Linebeck's ship.
So it leaves it open. It's kind of like Link's Awakening. And it's like, was it all a dream? And, you know, was it Windfish's dream? Was it Link's dream? Was it joined? Did those people exist? Maybe they do exist. It leaves it kind of open for interpretation. And that's why they put
Linebeck. Alternate universe.
There. Yeah, alternate universe. Not necessarily a dream.
Okay. I just completely forgot about that. So I beat this game over a week ago. I don't remember much. All right. And and before we go to Shelf Stacker Box, I want to give away a key. So here is a Steam key for Rebel Galaxy Outlaw. No idea what this is. The code is ENPTN4PLY7H02H7. That's a 0 or an O. I wish you luck. But there is your Steam code for Rebel Galaxy Outlaw.
It's a space western.
Oh, okay. I've had it for a while, so I'm just trying to get rid of these damn keys.
Yeah, it came out in 2015.
All right, we should go to Shelf Stacker Box. And Nate, what about you?
I'm going to put this in the stack. I had a great time with this game after I got used to the controls and, you know, doing a dungeon over and over again, which is, as we've brought up, not that bad. But yeah, that's going in the stack. Nintendo, I know you listen to this, and I know you value my opinion, but please put real dungeons in the next Zelda game.
I hope they don't listen to this. They might send me a cease and desist letter. How much should I talk? So, all right. And Barry, what about you?
You know, it's not my favorite Zelda game, but it's still a Zelda game and one I did enjoy. And I think there's a lot to love about this game. There's a lot of unique bosses. There's a lot of unique puzzles. And, you know, if you get past the touch controls and get used to them, and if you get past going back to the Temple of the Ocean King and realize it's not that big of a deal, I think there's a lot to love about this game and the story and the characters and the charm. There's a lot of charm. And for that reason, I will put it on the shelf.
Okay. And I'll go next. I'm going to put it in the stack. I had a good time. At first, I wasn't sure. I thought it was going to be lower, but the game really grew on me. And since I have beaten it and been able to sit back and think more about it, it's going to stack. I had a good time. I'm really glad I finally got to play this game and mark it off my backlog. It feels so good to have it done. And Richard?
I'm actually going to put it on the stack because, like I said, among all the Zelda games, it's got a great story. It's got some good music. It's got some fun boss fights. Unfortunately, it's the Temple of the Ocean King that really does drag it down. I mean, they fixed some of those problems with Spirit Tracks, thankfully. But it doesn't have that, it doesn't give me that full replay value. Like, it's something I'd want to, you know, pick up again or play it multiple times within purchase of it. It's just one of those, it's a Zelda game. It's good to an extent. I mean, it's not box worthy, in my opinion. Some people would might disagree with that because of the dungeon, but it's definitely stack worthy. It's not one you want to replay on a constant basis. It's more or less replaying it every so many years. That'd be a good thing. That helps you.
All right. And I should introduce what we're talking about next week. Next week, you can hear us talk about Tomb Raider Anniversary.
Yes.
Another game that's been on my backlog forever. So.
And it's the first time I played through it. So, yeah, you're going to get things because I played the original. So stay tuned for that. And also, you'll hear some commentary on Laura's posterior, too.
Yes, I'm sure you will. Especially there'll be alcohol consumed in that episode, too. So, all right. And Barry, where can we find you at?
You can find me on Twitter, Hawk Hellfire. You can also find me on Blue Sky and Fuse over with the same Hawk Hellfire. And you could find me over at Nintendo Fuse and NintendoFuse.com, where we have a bi-weekly podcast every other Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern live. And, of course, PremiumEditionGames.com. And you can find our latest releases that you could purchase in stock games as well as pre-orders. We do have our next series of titles dropping very, very soon on March 25th. We have our next Direct. So stay tuned for more information and follow us on social medias, Premium Edition Games everywhere. Except Twitter, it's at Premium Edition 1.
And you will see a link to show notes to what he just said. And Nate, where can we find you at?
Hey, you can find me on TikTok at NateDoesComedy79. Or if you are around the Midwest area, not that I'm that big, but in Ohio, you can find me at Random Comedy Open Mics doing stand-up.
Right. And if you enjoyed this episode, over 600, feels good to say that, other episodes of this podcast, you can find everything we do on Podbean. Just go on Podbean and search, and you will find all our content. We do games, movies, TV, comics, whatever the hell people convince me to or I convince people to talk about. So definitely go check out our giant catalog. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon. If a little dog, you vote in our Patreon poll. You will
what
see
is
a link
the
in
Patreon
the show notes.
Poll this time round? You haven't been mentioning them.
No, I don't mention anymore. Too much. I kept forgetting. Right now, it's Studio Ghibli movies, and if we should do internals. So, hey, and you get exclusive things sometimes. I actually posted our Barbie unedited video content. So every so often there will be. I'm going to try to start doing more on the Patreon. So, well, it's $1. You can vote. You get to vote, and you get to help affect the show. So $1, you should join us. I keep it cheap on purpose because I just want more people to join. And want to give a shout out to my awesome intro and outro courtesy of Helena at Hell Half Free. You can follow her on TikTok, Twitch, Instagram. You will see a link to the show notes to her link tree. Definitely go check her out and follow her. And give it want to give a shout out to a Gamer Looks at 40 with Bill Tucker. He's on the show quite often. Definitely go support his show. He just came back, started producing again. He's doing Final Fantasy right now. And please follow Nintendo Main Podcast and Nomads of Fantasy. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, YouTube, TikTok, wherever you get your podcasts. And please review us wherever you get your podcasts. We need reviews. Helps us out. Helps with the algorithm. So I think that's everything I need to say. So we will see you guys all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Have a good one.